From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. When United States Attorney General Bill Barr testified before the House Judiciary Committee yesterday, one of the most interesting moments across four contentious hours didn't even really involve Barr himself. It came when Representative Debbie Mucarcel Powell, a Florida Democrat, directed Barr's attention to a video screen.
Look at these videos for one second. Yeah. We have seen violence in Venezuela at the hands of Maduro, firing tear gas at protesters and using brutal tactics to crush demonstrations. That's what we see from dictators on both the left and the right. But it's hard to distinguish these photos from those events and from the videos that we've seen by U.S. federal police in Portland tear gassing and breaking the bones of a peacefully protesting U.S. Navy veteran. Very similar.
Now, this video was about 30 seconds long, and it showed scenes of protesters and federal police response in Venezuela and scenes of protesters and federal response in Portland, Oregon. A few minutes later, ranking member Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio insisted on a point of order.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Was the video played by the previous member, was that a video of things that happened in the United States or in Venezuela? I just want a clarification. What was the video?
And just before gaveling out, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler answered.
The ranking member asked whether the video shown by the general lady from Florida took place in the U.S. or in Ecuador.
No, Venezuela.
And that, sir, in the U.S. or Venezuela. And that, sir, is precisely the point. This concludes
no,
the
no, no.
hearing.
My point was it was Venezuela.
In fact, as we said, the video was not just Venezuela. Again, it showed scenes from both Venezuela and what has been happening around the Hatfield Federal Courthouse in Portland, Oregon. Well, Jay Johnson, former Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, joins us now. And Secretary Johnson, respond to what Representative Nadler said. Is that the point?
Thanks for having me back. Happy to join you for this discussion. I too, am very concerned about events in Portland and elsewhere around this country right now. First and foremost, if I may, I think is the question of the legality of the deployment of federal civilian law enforcement to patrol the streets generally in places like Portland. The administration, the president, the acting secretary have invoked a provision of law that says that the Secretary of Homeland Security has the responsibility to protect federal buildings, federal properties. True enough. That was true in the prior administration. It is true now. And we do that principally through the Federal Protective Service. I deployed the Federal Protective Service during times of heightened tension, heightened threat environments after terrorist attacks in this country and elsewhere. Now, beyond that, it becomes a more difficult question that frankly doesn't lend itself to an easy answer. It is clear that we have the DHS has the legal authority to protect federal property. On the other hand, if you have large-scale deployments of federal civilian law enforcement on the streets of cities like Portland, arresting people on less than probable cause, engaging in acts of excessive force, which is what we've seen in many of the video images shown across the country, that is something that is highly legally problematic. It seems to be a systematic violation of federal civil rights, and there are lawsuits now being initiated in Portland and possibly elsewhere to end this behavior. Now, in between those two extremes, I can readily imagine circumstances, compelling circumstances, where it is necessary to deploy federal civilian law enforcement to a city to protect civil rights, to protect the civil rights of innocent civilians, where local law enforcement is failing to do so, to enforce a federal civil rights court order, for example. But as I tell young lawyers all the time, whether it's when I was Secretary of DHS or in my private law practice, bad facts make bad law. compelling facts make good law. And we're very much in this gray zone right now. And my concern is that there is an abuse of authority going on across the country, which will at some point perhaps lead the courts to intervene and stop what is going on.
Okay. So there's a lot to dig into there in that gray zone. But I want to just reiterate the question that I asked earlier, because we had a United States Congresswoman, the congresswoman from Florida, play a video for the Attorney General yesterday in which she put images of a federalized police response
yes.
in Venezuela, in Maduro's Venezuela, and juxtaposed that against the federalized police response in Portland, Oregon. She wasn't just insinuating. She was directly saying that you cannot tell the difference between one authoritarian government and the actions happening in the United States right now. Is that a fair comparison?
I think it's an absolutely valid point to make. When you look at the images of what is happening in Portland and elsewhere, it looks virtually indistinguishable.
And so what is the consequence of that? If you're saying that the actions happening in Portland, Oregon are indistinguishable from that of what is done by an authoritarian government?
The consequence, first and foremost, in my view, is that there may be a systematic wide violation of federal civil rights going on at the hands of our very federal civilian law enforcement. The other, in my judgment, far-reaching consequence is an overall degrading of the credibility of federal law enforcement, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, in the eyes of the American public. The other question to ask is what to do about it. And so if you don't change the policies and the practices, then we have to change the leaders who promulgate those policies and practices. I have said before publicly, this looks, feels, smells like, sounds a whole lot like election year politics. Our president trying to play the law and order card that Richard Nixon played so effectively in 1968, but I think the circumstances are wholly different and the public mood is wholly different.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to what Attorney General Bill Barr said yesterday about this, as he testified before the House Judiciary Committee, I should say. And the Attorney General repeatedly said that the presence of these federal officers in Portland, Oregon, he said, is warranted.
The courthouse is under attack. The federal resources are inside the perimeter around the courthouse, defending it from almost 2 months of daily attacks where people march to the court, try to gain entrance, and have set fires, thrown things, used explosives, and injured police, including just this past weekend, perhaps permanently blinding three federal officers with lasers.
That's the Attorney General yesterday on Capitol Hill. Secretary Johnson, you know, I actually have gotten a lot of feedback from listeners about this issue, and many of whom say that they are absolutely aligned with what the Attorney General is saying. I mean, for example, I got a tweet from someone who calls themselves J.L. Boole, and J.L. says, "There is no constitutional right to deface and molest public property, nor is there a constitutional right to launch fireworks at police." So he sees this as not a diminishment of the rights that that are conferred upon citizens through the Constitution, but rather an affirmation that you don't have rights to graffiti a federal building.
Well, first, let's look at the larger picture here of what is going on across the nation in reaction to George Floyd's death. Mm-hmm. The overwhelming majority of protest marches have been peaceful. You know, I have participated in marches in reaction to George Floyd's death, so I guess that makes me a protester as well. The Attorney General is trying to make, I understand the case he is trying to make, but much of what is going on by federal civilian law enforcement goes well beyond simply protecting the Hatfield Federal Courthouse in Portland, Oregon, or federal buildings in other American cities. And indeed, our president has threatened to go far beyond doing just that in his various tweets and his various different statements. And what we are seeing in the images that have been showed yesterday and before yesterday are federal law enforcement officers engaging in acts of excessive force. We've all seen the video of federal law enforcement hitting a veteran of the United States Navy who went out to protest. And we are seeing what appears to be a systematic violation of federal civil rights by federal civilian law enforcement. And that, to me, is very, very concerning. It seems to go well beyond what the Attorney General says he is doing.
It makes me wonder, and in addition, so the gray zone is big and broad here. And so, Secretary, we have just a minute before we have to take a quick break here. Help me understand, how unusual is it for these kinds of deployments, which, as you know, per what you said earlier, have happened before, to happen without the consent or cooperation of the local authorities to which these DHS officers are being deployed?
Unprecedented in my experience. That's the simple answer. Certainly nothing like this happened on my watch or in my memory, the history of the entire Department of Homeland Security.
And so, therefore, according to more than 20 national security officials who wrote an op-ed in USA Today yesterday, it's the Trump administration is essentially turning the DHS into a domestic security agency. Do you agree with that?
Well, DHS is in fact a domestic security agency but not for this purpose, not for this kind of mission, very clearly. And okay. I agree with much of what was said in that letter. I know many of the people who authored it.
Well, here we'll talk a lot more about that when we come back. We're talking about what happens when Homeland Security becomes Homeland Policing. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking today about what happens or is happening when Homeland Security turns into Homeland Policing. And Jay Johnson joins us. He served as the Secretary for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security from 2013 to 2017 in the Obama administration. And just before the break, Secretary Johnson, we had just started talking about this letter that appeared in USA Today, signed by 21 former high-level officials in the national security establishment in the United States. And in it, they say they are writing to provide a clarion call for what we, quote, must all value, our citizens' constitutional rights. And they assert that those constitutional rights are either at risk or being violated by the actions of these federal officers in Portland, Oregon. Now, one of the people who signed this letter is one of your counterparts, former Homeland Secretary Tom Ridge. And he has been very outspoken about what DHS has been doing in Portland. For example, in an interview last week with SiriusXM, Ridge, who, by the way, is a Republican and also former governor of Pennsylvania, he said this.
The department was established to protect America from the ever-present threat of global terrorism. It was not established to be the president's personal militia. And then as governor, I go back to those days and say, had I been governor even now, I would welcome the opportunity to work with any federal agency to reduce crime or lawlessness in any of the cities. But I would tell you, Michael, it would be a cold day in hell before I would consent to an unilateral, uninvited intervention in one of my cities.
That's former DHS Secretary Tom Ridge, also former governor of Pennsylvania. Secretary Johnson, I think that quote from Mr. Ridge really encapsulates the thing that is most troubling right now, and that is the Department of Homeland Security and the officers who work for it was established to protect the United States from foreign attackers, right? From terrorists, really, in the wake of 9/11. And yet here we see, and I think you can make an argument, we have seen, even prior to Portland, the DHS officers are being deployed to protect buildings from Americans, from residents and citizens of the United States. It's that fundamental shift here, I think, that is most worrisome. I'm curious, given the way DHS was founded and the broad powers that it was given repeatedly by the United States Congress, do you think that this was actually inevitable?
Well, put aside Portland for the moment. The mission of DHS has, in fact, shifted since 2002. DHS was created in 2002 on the assumption that the terrorist threat to our nation was extraterritorial, and that if you consolidate into one cabinet-level department all the different ways one enters this country, land, sea, and air, you are addressing terrorism. Since 2002, and specifically in the period 2014, 15, 16, we have seen domestic-based terrorism that is often inspired by things from overseas or even inspired by things here in this country. And so DHS needs to pivot and readjust in that sense. Now, put all that aside, I think there's a little bit of nuance that is being lost here. DHS is a domestic security agency in the following sense. DHS is responsible for port security, border security, cyber security, aviation security, domestic and international travel, maritime security. I could go on and on. My principal objection to what is happening right here, right now, is that we may well be making things worse by deploying federal civilian law enforcement in this highly provocative way to the streets of Portland, to other cities. And as I said earlier, it has a smell and a feel of election year politics to it. And so those are my objections to this. And, you know, I've agreed, and I do agree with the concerns of Secretary Ridge and many of my colleagues about the misuse of the Department of Homeland Security for this purpose.
I wonder, though. I mean, for example, many of the officers that have essentially been seconded into the Federal Protective Service right now, they come from Customs and Border Protection. They come from ICE. They come from tactical teams that are supposed to serve on immigration issues. Now, I know a lot of people have also said, well, Meghna, technically anything within 100 miles of a U.S. border is jurisdiction for ICE and CBP. But my point is that there are many people who would say, well, Secretary Johnson, we have actually already seen this kind of behavior, this kind of approach, this kind of violation of rights on the border with these very ICE officers and CBP officers. So it should come as no surprise that when you bring them into an American city to protect federal property, they would behave in exactly the same way.
It is not per se illegal to deploy CBP and ICE officers to support the Federal Protective Service. It is problematic to deploy CBP and ICE officers, even those who have a specialized mission, to an American city to carry out a mission that they are not well versed in, with, you know, dealing with large numbers of the civilian population. And a concern I have is when we witness these incidents of excessive force arresting people on less than probable cause, it may be due to the fact that these officers are not adequately trained for this type of mission.
Well, If Secretary, if I may, I'd like to actually bring into the conversation now another voice. Barbara McQuaid joins us. She's a law professor at the University of Michigan. She served as U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan from 2015 to 2017, was also Assistant U.S. Attorney for Detroit for 12 years, and served as Deputy Chief of the National Security Unit. Barbara McQuaid, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Megna. Great to be with you. And Secretary Johnson, honored to be on with you.
Thank you.
Well,
Barbara.
You heard the secretary earlier. You heard the secretary earlier talk about his concerns about the gray area. Just to underscore a point that he made, it is clear. I mean, I've been looking at the statutes that yes, the Federal Protective Service can officers from Customs or Border Protection or ICE or anywhere else in DHS can be legally brought into the FPS to protect federal property. That's clear in the statutes. But in that gray area, that legal gray area that the secretary is concerned about, Professor McQuaid, like, where do you see the area that of most worry in terms of what
they're doing? I'm most concerned that I am seeing an administration using law enforcement for what I believe to be political purposes. No doubt federal agents can and should be defending federal property. That's a courthouse. Judges and parties need to go into that building and conduct business. Vandalizing it, burning it is absolutely to be condemned, and agents can and should be protecting that. What they are also doing, however, is engaging in crowd control, dealing with civil unrest, something for which they are not trained. And although the law permits them to investigate any federal crime and to arrest somebody where they have probable cause, if it occurs in their presence, it's allowing them to now roam out into the streets. William Barr, in a 2001 interview, talked about this very strategy, about how he used it to get federal agents on the ground in the Virgin Islands in the aftermath of Hurricane Hugo. He said, the strategy is you find some federal property to defend, you get people there because that's all legitimate, and then once you got your foot in the door, you've got this federal presence to do other things. And so that's where I think just because these agents can do what they're doing doesn't mean they should. You have to exercise law enforcement judgments with prudence, with respect for community norms, with coordination for locals, and with restraint, as Secretary Johnson pointed out. Where they're really crossing the line is in these arrests without probable cause, arresting people just for questioning and taking them away in unmarked vans. They can't do that. And I actually feel a lot of empathy for these agents who are being put into this situation without adequate training, without clear guidance, and being asked to do things beyond the scope of their duties. And so I see a president looking to, in his words, dominate the streets, control the battle space, go into cities with great force. I think he is trying to highlight the violence around the courthouse, showing only those images, focusing on those images, doing a lot of chest thumping to show how tough he is on crime, when in fact they're escalating tensions and not doing the thing that law enforcement is supposed to do, which is to bring calm to chaos and reduce tensions.
If I could.
Yeah, go ahead, Secretary.
So Barbara and I could probably think of really, really compelling circumstances where deploying federal civilian law enforcement to a city would be in the best interest of the nation and would be legally justified. So, for example, you know, John Lewis died last week. John Lewis was a freedom rider across the South. Suppose, for example, you had a similar situation where a local law enforcement agency refuses to protect freedom riders at a bus station or, you know, in a journey across the South, but the federal government has determined it is their federal civil right to ride in an integrated bus. I could see a circumstance where we would deploy federal civilian law enforcement somewhere to protect freedom riders and to protect their federal civil rights. This is a very, very different situation, which is what I mean when I say bad facts can make bad law and compelling facts tend to make good law.
Well, I mean, to your point, Secretary, we have seen that in U.S. history, right? I mean, President Johnson deployed the Alabama National Guard, right, to protect civil rights activists. But that was the National Guard here. Do you see is there a distinguishing fact between the National Guard and effectively what DHS officers are today?
Typically, in a circumstance where a mayor or a governor needs help restoring the peace, they look to the National Guard under the control of a governor. It is an exceptional circumstance, but it has happened, like the instance you just cited, where we federalize the National Guard and it is under the command and control of the president. The point I'm trying to make here, and I'm not at all making this point to try to justify what is going on, just the opposite. The point I'm making here, it is not inconceivable legally that you could use federal civilian law enforcement for the same purpose as we did the National Guard during the Civil Rights era.
Mm. But of course, just to underscore what you're saying, that is not what you're seeing happening in Portland.
This is something very different.
Yeah. Yeah. So both of you have mentioned the video images we've seen, and also just the factual events of protesters being arrested away from the courthouse, the federal courthouse in Portland, and you know being put into unmarked vans. Unmarked minivans by federal officers. Now, the legality of that was brought up yesterday as Attorney General Bill Barr testified before the House Judiciary Committee. I just want to play a couple of moments from that. Representative Ted Lieu, Democrat from California, asked Barr about this incident, and here is what Lieu said.
What the federal officials did was illegal because they didn't have probable cause. And how do we know that? Because Deputy Director of the Federal Protective Service, Chris Klein, admitted it on national TV. Deputy Director Klein said that the individual that they were questioning was in a crowd and in an area where another individual was aiming a laser at the eyes of officers. That's guilt by association. That's what the Fourth Amendment prohibits.
And here's part of how the Attorney General responded.
If you have information that someone has a laser and is using it and later pick him up and he doesn't have it, it doesn't mean that there wasn't probable cause. It means he doesn't have the laser. The question is, you know, was it reasonable for you to rely on the information that you had and the identification of that individual? In some cases, it could be a misidentification. In other cases, it could be the person, you know, ditched the laser. So there is a distinction between whether the person ultimately can be shown to have violated the law and whether there was probable cause for the police to make the inquiry and take them and interrogate them or ask them questions at least.
So Barbara McQuaid, a little bit more of background here, because in that same press conference that Ted Lieu was referring to, Chris Klein, the deputy director of the Federal Protective Service, said that they had brought this person in and the U.S. attorneys in Portland also came in, because they're doing that for every arrest the federal officers make, and they said they told the federal officers, you don't have what you need. You don't have probable cause. So they let the guy go after 20 minutes. My question is, I mean, and I'll lean on your experience here as being in the U.S. Attorney's office, presuming that the U.S. attorneys in Portland are continuously being brought into these situations and they're saying you don't have probable cause, why is this still happening? Is DHS not learning? Are they not listening? What's going on? Can you even conjecture at all?
Yeah, I don't know. The U.S. attorney there, Billy Williams, is someone I know. He actually served during the Obama administration as well as the Trump administration as U.S. attorney. He has made a statement that he was calling for an investigation into one of the attacks on protesters. He has also charged 18 individuals with crimes for assaults on officers and related crimes. But I don't know what he's doing behind the scenes. What I would hope he is doing is talking to these agents about what they should and should not be doing. It seemed that one thing is William Barr is a very skilled lawyer. And when you're listening to him testify, a couple things to keep in mind are, listen to the words he chooses. He's very careful. Mm-hmm. You'll notice yesterday, even the question about, do you think it was appropriate? Is it ever appropriate to accept assistance from a foreign government in an election? And he had a pause for a long time, and he asked the question to be repeated because he was looking for the word appropriate. And when he heard appropriate, oh, yeah, that's fine. He was being careful that it wasn't illegal before he answered that question. Similarly, in the segment that you just played, if you listen carefully, he doesn't answer the direct question about the confrontation that was discussed by the deputy director of the Federal Protective Service, which I think was a lawless stop. Instead, what he says is, in general, what you do is, and he describes a protocol that is lawful. And I think to the untrained ear, it sounds like a satisfactory answer. But if you listen carefully, he does not address the specific situation. And that specific situation is incredibly problematic. What they did is pick up a person who they said that they just had information and wanted to question him, and that they took him away from the scene because it was dangerous, because there were a lot of people coming around, and for the officer and the individual's safety, they said they took him away in a van. You can't do that. You can't arrest someone just for questioning. You have to have probable cause to take them into custody.
Well, we're talking about what happens when Homeland Security becomes Homeland Policing. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tomorrow, we are going to take a look at the next stimulus plan being hashed out in Congress. And obviously, it's a very time-sensitive plan because the $600 employment checks from the federal government are drying up. The final legislation will have a huge impact on what happens to the economy and people in this country as the COVID pandemic rages on. So we want to hear from you. How has your life been, your job, your family? Have the $600 checks been a lifeline? What's going to happen if and when they stop? Call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That is for tomorrow's show. Today, we are talking about what happens or could happen when Homeland Security becomes Homeland Policing. And we're joined today by the former Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson. Barbara McQuaid is also with us. She's a professor of law at the University of Michigan and a former U.S. attorney as well. Now, I'd like to actually spend the rest of the program taking a step back with both of you, because I think one of the things that I'm trying to most understand is those arrests away from federal property aside, which there's obviously questions about the legality of that, the deployment and the presence and even the firing of tear gas on protesters by federal police, isn't the basic problem, and I'll start with you, Secretary Johnson, that all of that is legal, that most of what is happening within the bounds of the law, and yet it is still, in your mind, as you've been saying, a violation of what Americans' rights should be, or what the purpose of the Department of Homeland Security should be, that we can have this violation within the bounds of the law?
So let me elaborate on what I think people, including those who wrote the op-ed, mean when they say Homeland Policing. Homeland Security was created for very, very discrete missions. And in our federalist system of federal, national, state governments, Homeland Security is not a nationwide, on-the-street police force like they have in other countries. And first and foremost, consistent with the 10th Amendment, public safety on the ground, on the streets of an American city, is a local function. So it's like, you know, where are the conservatives when you need them? And so people are objecting to what appears to be an attempt by our president to create a federal policing mission by having federal civilian law enforcement on the streets, firing tear gas at people who are engaged in protest. And so that's the fundamental problem here. That's the fundamental disconnect that people are raising through op-eds and otherwise. Just as a very basic matter, making things worse, not better, from a public safety point of view.
Barbara McQuaid?
Yeah, I think that you raise an interesting point, Meghna, which is, what should the law tolerate and should we consider changes in the law? I think we have to be able to protect federal property, but I think the way that this administration is going about using it is what is so problematic. And do we need to change the law to reflect our values in a better way? The use of military garb, the camouflage, you know, suggests a militaristic presence that is not helpful. As I said before, de-escalation is so much more important than controlling the battle space, as President Trump likes to say. Even the names of the operations, they call this Operation Diligent Valor. There is Operation Legend, Operation Relentless Pursuit. All of those things suggest this idea of us versus them versus law enforcement being part of a community. When I was the U.S. attorney in Detroit, we had a consent judgment with the Detroit Police Department to resolve allegations of unconstitutional policing, including excessive force. And a huge part of the resolution of that was embracing the concept of community policing, working together with members of a community to achieve public safety and public trust with law enforcement. I echo Secretary Johnson's thoughts about he worries that this is degrading the credibility of federal agents everywhere. Detroit, the mayor of Detroit and the Detroit police chief have asked for additional federal agents to come to Detroit, not to quell unrest, but to help supplement law enforcement in violent crime. But I worry that the community will now reject those resources because of what they've seen in Portland. And so President Trump may be bolstering his own election fortunes, but he is harming law enforcement in the long term and thereby harming public safety.
Barbara makes the legal point, if I may, that I constantly preached when I was at DHS and at the Department of Defense, which is that you may have an authority to do something that exists, but if you use that authority in a highly, highly controversial way, it could be taken away from you altogether, and you don't have it anymore for the really, really compelling circumstance when you need it, which is why I keep saying bad facts make bad law. And so this is an authority that may or may not exist. It could be in the gray zone, probably is in the gray zone, that may end up being taken away altogether because of the way in which this president has used it.
Well, so having the authority, to your point, doesn't mean you should use it. But, you know, last week we talked to Yale historian Tim Snyder, and he's the author of On Tyranny, Lessons from the 20th Century. He has looked at authoritarian governments across the 20th century, and he told us that a hallmark of those governments is finding the edges of legality or the edges of authority and stretching them as far as they can. And in his mind, that is exactly what he said is going on in Portland. And here's a little bit more from that conversation.
When I think of homeland security, I think of human beings and not objects. And when I think of the president's responsibilities, I think of them as protecting the Constitution rather than things in the world.
So that's Yale history professor Tim Snyder. And I want to just juxtapose that against what Attorney General Bill Barr said yesterday on Capitol Hill, because he once again said that the tactics by those federal officers are entirely justified in his mind because of the behavior of protesters, whom he called rioters, and he said from the passivity, in his mind, of local law enforcement.
We are on the defense. We're not out looking for trouble. And if the state and the city would provide the law enforcement services that other jurisdictions do, we would have no need to have additional marshals in the courthouse.
So Barbara McQuaid, respond to that. It's particularly the Attorney General saying, we are on the defense. On the defense from whom? From protesters? And who is the we here?
Yeah, that's a very loaded statement that Attorney General Barr made. I think that he fails to recognize the importance of cooperation with locals, and that local communities, consistent with the 10th Amendment, are the ones that are supposed to decide for themselves what their policing ought to look like. Federal agencies have limited jurisdictions, and they exist in every city in America. They're already in every city in America, but they stay in their lane, and they work on the things that they're supposed to, as opposed to out roaming the streets in policing. I think one of the things that he said yesterday in his opening statement, and is suggested in that statement you just played, is this idea that following the killing of George Floyd and the unrest in the cities, police are on the defensive, and that cities aren't doing their job, and so it's falling on feds to step in and do that. And he says that crime is up because of these attacks on the police. He says that without any evidence. I think an equally plausible theory is that attacks are up and violent crime is up because the police have lost some legitimacy because of what we see in Lafayette Square and Portland. The protests in Portland have grown as the federal presence has grown. And so, you know, the tough talk language does not de-escalate. And that should be the name of the game here, diffusing tensions. And when you just add more fuel to the fire with a show of force, that tends to be counterproductive and to backfire. And so it seems that, you know, William Barr's very aggressive theory of policing is not working, and he ought to consider other causes before just adding more and more and more police force.
Hmm. So I want to dig a little bit more with both of you beyond actually the question of legality and to the deeper questions of how politics are having an impact on the fabric of our democracy. And what I mean is, I'm thinking back to the founding of or the creation of the Department of Homeland Security itself. Created in the wake of 9/11, a historic terrorist attack. President Bush at that time said this was the largest reorganization of the federal government in decades, if not a century. It created this giant security apparatus, brought all sorts of federal law enforcement agencies under one roof, was given enormous power, kind of murky jurisdiction in some places. I mean, Secretary Johnson, looking back now, it was not the stage set even back then for the arrival of a leader who was willing to exploit the potential that was already given to the Department of Homeland Security, in fact, on the day that it was created.
Interesting question. And the reality is that our Constitution, the way our federal government is set up, assumes a rational, mature, level-headed, circumspect leader at the top who respects the relative missions of each agency, respects the institutions of our government, and ensures that they each function the way in which Congress originally intended. DHS, a lot of people ask, is DHS too big, this massive reorganization? Yes, it was a very large reorganization that created the third largest cabinet-level department of our government with 250,000 people and some 22 components. In some respects, it's too big, but in other respects, it is a fraction of the size of ministries of the interior of other nations across the globe. And DHS lacks, because the Congress intended it this way, it lacks a nationwide police force to patrol the streets. We don't operate that way in this country. We leave that to state and local law enforcement to carry out. And so the components do in fact have relatively discrete missions: border security, port security, aviation security, maritime security, the Secret Service, FEMA, response to natural disasters. And one of the reasons there's this this outrage is because this president is trying to bend those agencies into pursuing something that was not intended.
Mm. Well, a couple of things there, Secretary. So, I mean, you said we don't have a federal police force, but many people look upon what's happening in Portland as the formation of one. Regardless, if not official, the sort of trial run of the formation of one, which is of concern regardless of who's in the White House as of 2021 or beyond. And in addition, you talked about ministries of the interior in other countries. And I just want to take a second, if I could, to read something that appeared just a couple of days ago in the New Yorker magazine. It was written by Masha Gessen. And Gessen grew up in the Soviet Union. And Gessen writes, quote, "The creation of the DHS marked a shift in the way that Americans think and talk about the country and about people. There are examples that make DHS seem like it's something that should exist. That logic held, though, only if you thought about travel, immigration, and trade primarily as security concerns. There are countries that think like that," Gessen writes. "I grew up in one. It was called the Soviet Union, and it had an agency, the Committee for State Security, or the KGB, which had its tentacles in every area of society." Do you think that that could happen with the powers and the behaviors that we're seeing from federal officers in Portland?
Hopefully, we still have a system of checks and balances in this country. Hopefully, we have a Congress that, if it sees the executive using his authority in ways not intended by Congress, will step in and act, either through a realignment of our federal government or reappropriating money in a different direction. I guess the point I'd like to make is that most often the outrage there's a lot of outrage being directed at the Department of Homeland Security right now. Some are even calling for it just deconstructed altogether. I think the better answer is, if you don't like the mission and the policies, change the mission and the policies. And if that doesn't happen, you change the leaders who are promulgating those missions and policies. Is DHS perfect? No. Should DHS be subject to a serious reevaluation of how we organize that department? Yes. But so often, the nature of the objection is more to the way the department is being used, not the department itself.
Mm. Well, Barbara McQuaid, we have about a minute left here. What do you think the checks are right now on what we're seeing in Portland?
Well, I think the problem is not so much the Department of Homeland Security as it is the people who are driving it, President Trump and Acting Secretary Chad Wolf, who are willing to push those legal boundaries in an effort to look tough on crime. But I think that, as Secretary Johnson says, we need to constantly review the way we police ourselves, federal law enforcement. I think if President Trump did not have a DHS, he would be using Department of Justice agencies. He would send FBI and ATF agents out there, or he would call up the National Guard as he can under the Insurrection Act. So I don't think it's the DHS, it's the person running it. But if based on the data and evidence and how we've seen it used or abused, I think it behooves Congress to take a look at it, hold hearings, and make adjustments as necessary to ensure that we're protecting the constitutional rights of all Americans.
Well, Barbara McQuaid is a professor of law at the University of Michigan and former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. Professor McQuaid, thank you so much for joining us again.
My pleasure, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
And Jay Johnson, former Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security in the Obama administration. Secretary Johnson, thank you for coming back to the show as well.
Thanks for having me back.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.